Hi, and welcome to ANZ's Trade Finance in the Spotlight podcast session. I'm Kelly, an advisor to the trade and supply chain business of ANZ. Here with me today is Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Kelly.
Rob is a new trade customer of our bank and is interested in understanding Incoterms. Since Incoterms are widely used and play a significant role in a trade transaction, I thought it was of value to share this discussion with all of our customers. Rob was kind enough to agree, and here we are. So, welcome, Rob. Pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, where would you like to start?
Well, it'd be worthwhile if we kick things off with some background on what Incoterms are and what purpose they serve.
Sure. Well, Incoterms is an abbreviation for international and commercial terms. They are a set of standard rules concerning terms of trade, which reflect the obligations of seller and buyer in a contract of sale. Abbreviated terms of trade, such as FOB, for example, have been used by traders for a long period of time, though there was originally no standard interpretation of these terms, which, as you can imagine, led to ambiguity and even disputes. So in order to standardise the meaning of these terms, the International Chamber of Commerce published the Incoterms rules in 1936.
Really? That's quite a long time ago.
Yes, but of course, since then, these rules have been revised 7 times to reflect the changes in industry practices. The latest version is Incoterms 2010, which came into effect January 2011.
I see. One question though, you mentioned before the term abbreviated terms of trade. What exactly do you mean?
Well, terms of trade, or trade terms, refers to what the seller expects the buyer to do in executing the shipment of goods and vice versa. They're typically represented by a 3-letter acronym, which is inserted into a sales contract. Some common terms, for example, are FOB, CFR, or CIF.
That's right. I have seen the company I work for use FOB in our sales contracts. So are trade terms the same thing as Incoterms?
Well, no. As I mentioned, the trade terms are simply the 3-letter acronyms that are used in a sales contract. Rather, Incoterms are the formalised rules that outline the seller's and buyer's obligations when they use a specific trade term.
Okay. So how many trade terms are covered in Incoterms rules, and are they categorised somehow?
Well, lucky I came prepared. In total, there's 11 trade terms under the Incoterms 2010 rules, and they are split into 2 categories. Looking at my handy reference prepared earlier here, Rob, first 7 are Ex-Works, EXW, Free Carrier, FCA, Carriage Paid To, CPT, Carriage and Insurance Paid To, CIP, Delivered at Terminal, DAT, Delivered at Place, DAP, and Delivered Duty Paid, DDP. So all 7 of these can be applied regardless of the motor transport used to ship the goods.
All right, got all that.
Good. The second category contains 4, and they are Free Alongside Ship, FAS, Free On Board, FOB, the one I referred to earlier, Cost and Freight, CFR, and Cost Insurance and Freight, CIF. These 4 terms can only be applied when the goods are being shipped by sea or by inland waterways.
Right. So does that mean that the use of a particular Incoterm should be chosen based on the mode of transport?
That's partly right, but more importantly, a particular Incoterm rule is chosen to suit both parties in a transaction. Incoterm rules provide a lot of clarity to a sales contract, as they enable each party to agree on the desired outcomes in regards to the allocation of responsibilities and costs and risks within a transaction. So they allow for a single interpretation of the obligations of the buyer and seller across geographies, which helps to prevent potential disputes and ensures a smooth trade.
Well, that's clearly important. You did mention, though, that each Incoterm rule outlines the obligations of the buyer and seller. Do you mind giving a few examples of what kind of things are covered?
Yes, I sure can. Well, broadly speaking, Incoterm rules cover 3 main areas. Number 1, who has to clear the goods for export and import? So, for example, who pays import duties and who obtains an export license? Number two, who arranges for shipment and from where to where? So, let's just say your factory is located in Australia and your buyer's warehouse is in China. The rules outline who pays for bringing the goods from your factory to the port, who pays the ship operator to carry your goods to China, and who pays for moving the goods from the port in China to your buyer's warehouse. Number three, the rules outline where the risk of loss or damage to the goods transfers from the seller to the buyer. So, in the example I just mentioned, if the ship got caught in a storm and your goods were damaged, Rob, should the buyer still pay you?
I'd certainly like them to.
Well, of course. Bear in mind, though, that Incoterm rules do not cover where and how the ownership of the goods passes from the seller to the buyer.
Useful to know.
So, apart from these, Incoterm rules also cover allocation of costs, notices which the seller and buyer need to provide, who has to arrange for insurance, what risks have to be covered, documentation which the seller has to provide as proof of delivery, packing requirements, inspection requirements, and so on.
That's certainly a lot of obligations that are covered. I'm starting to get a real sense of how important it is to use Incoterms.
Yeah, and also remember, it is not only important for a buyer and seller to agree on a particular Incoterm rule, but to have a clear understanding of their application.
I see. So, typically, how are these Incoterms actually used in a trade transaction?
Well, bear in mind that Incoterms are rules, not laws. So, they are voluntary, which means that an Incoterm rule comes into effect only when it is incorporated into a sales contract by the buyer and the seller.
Does that mean that stating delivery on FOB basis in a sales contract is sufficient for an Incoterm to apply?
No, not really. Since Incoterms are voluntary rules, the sales contract must make it very clear that the trade term referred to is subject to the Incoterm rule. The recommended method of incorporating them will cover A, the chosen Incoterms rule, and B, the named place of delivery followed by Incoterms 2010. So, as an example, if you agreed to sell goods on an FOB basis and you are planning to ship from Australia, the sales contract should be worded as FOB Australian Ports Incoterms 2010.
So you explicitly need to refer to the current version of Incoterms.
Exactly right.
So would you say I should use Incoterms in every trade contract to ensure a smooth transaction?
Not necessarily. You must check whether Incoterms can be applied in your situation, as they are not suitable for every contract. For example, Incoterms cannot be used for trade in services. They can only be used when there is a physical movement of goods. Also, remember, Incoterms are applicable only to the contract of sale. They are not applicable to other contracts which you may enter into the course of completing your trade. For example, a contract of carriage or contract of insurance.
Right. Why is that?
Because Incoterms only cover the obligations of the seller and the buyer, which is the primary purpose of a sales contract. Other contracts are secondary to the sales contract or arise from the sales contract. For example, a contract of carriage is entered between either a seller or a buyer with a shipping company or a freight forwarder to move the goods from one place to another. So Incoterms do not apply to the contract of carriage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So these secondary contracts are between either the buyer or seller and a third party.
That's right.
Whereas Incoterms only refer strictly to the obligations between the buyer and seller.
Exactly.
Okay. In actual fact, the company I work for trades in goods, not services. So does that mean that in deals involving the movement of goods, I should determine which Incoterms are relevant to the deal and then build a sales contract around them?
Well, keep in mind, Rob, that Incoterms are not meant to replace the sales contract. Yes, they are an integral part of the contract, but are not the contract itself. So rather than building a sales contract around Incoterms, you should look to build Incoterms into a well-drawn sales contract. This is because contracts will cover a lot more detail about the underlying trade transaction. An Incoterm is just a part of those details. So just by incorporating an Incoterm, a contract does not become complete in its structure. For example, Incoterms do not cover the specification of goods, transfer of ownership, or the law which applies to a contract.
Okay. I assume you need to be careful when incorporating a specific Incoterm rule into a sales contract. Could you give me an example of the use of an Incoterm rule that is incorrect?
Okay. Well, one common incorrect application of an Incoterm rule is FOB, free on board, using it for containerized shipments. This is because Incoterm rule FOB signifies that the seller has to deliver the goods by placing them on board the vessel at the port of loading specified in the contract. If the goods are transported in shipping containers, the seller will typically deliver the container to the container terminal and will not have control over how and when the goods are actually placed on the vessel. If the container is damaged in the interim, the seller may have to bear the loss, even though they have completed all formalities. In these circumstances, FCA, or free carrier, would be more suitable, as the seller fulfills their obligation to deliver when they have handed over the goods, cleared for export, into the charge of the carrier at the port of loading specified in the contract. Therefore, it is very important that the Incoterms chosen are appropriate to your transaction.
Alright, but what if none of the 11 Incoterms cover my scenario? Can I modify an Incoterm rule?
Yes, you can. Since Incoterms are voluntary rules, the buyer and seller can agree to modify them to suit their transaction. In fact, it is not uncommon for a buyer and a seller to modify the Incoterms, especially in commodity trades. The key point to remember, Rob, is that a clear explanation of those modifications must be stated in the sales contract. If not stated, there may be misunderstandings at a later stage in the transaction.
It's very useful information. Thanks, Kelly. You also mentioned earlier that Incoterms are regularly revised. Why is that?
Well, Incoterm rules reflect industry practices, so they need to be updated to reflect these changes. The Commission on Commercial Law and Practice of the International Chamber of Commerce, bit of a tongue twister there.
Indeed.
Updates these rules when it is deemed necessary by the trading community. So over the last decade, there have been many changes in industry practices and the movement of goods through international waters. This is due to advancements in technology, security concerns, and in particular, the threat of terrorism. So these changes therefore prompted a revision to the rules.
So what are some examples of elements that the Incoterms 2010 take into account that the earlier versions did not?
To give you a few examples, the latest version takes into consideration customs free zones, which is an area that goods may be landed, handled, manufactured, or reconfigured and re-exported without the intervention of the customs authorities. The new rules also cover requirements for security clearances, which is a reflection of enhanced security measures applied by authorities to ensure goods do not pose a threat to life or property. They embrace improvements in technology that have allowed for increased usage of electronic communications. So use of paper documents, as you would know, is becoming outdated in many industries and countries. Documents are now being exchanged using electronic platforms, having a significant impact on the document workflow of a transaction. So the latest version talks about electronic documentation, and Incoterms 2010 expressively state that the transfer of documents electronically is acceptable.
It's very true when you talk about the trend towards electronic platforms, because my company certainly increasingly prefers using electronic documents over paper.
Also, Incoterms 2010 is the first version to recognise that Incoterms can be applied for both domestic and international trade. Incoterms have always been applied to domestic trade, but this version of Incoterms makes it explicit. Incoterms have traditionally been classified under four different classifications, so E, F, C, and D terms. Incoterms 2010, however, breaks away from this tradition and classifies them in two categories, as I mentioned earlier.
And these two categories, are they based on the mode of transport?
That's right. One category for terms which are applicable for any mode of transportation, such as sea, air, road, or rail. The second category for transportation by sea or by inland waterways only.
very interesting. Thank you, Kelly. You've given me a really good insight into Incoterms. Really appreciate it.
No problems. Let's catch up again soon and we'll talk about individual Incoterms rules in more detail.
That'd be great. I'm looking forward to it.
And again, thank you, Rob, and to our listeners for joining us in this podcast session. We hope you found it useful. Make sure that you watch this space for more discussions on Incoterms and various other topics on trade finance. We look forward to having you again in our future podcast sessions. Bye for now.